Welcome to the Sexy Aging Podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Minoknuku. I started this podcast because I have a fascination with aging, and I'm constantly searching for credible guests to educate, inform, entertain, and inspire you to live an incredible second half of your life. So it's not surprising that I stumbled across the topic of menopause, and down the rabbit hole I went. If you started listening to this podcast from the first episode, you'll actually be joining me on the journey of discovering what menopause is and how best to support my menopause symptoms. And if you are new here, welcome, welcome. A big shout out to my sponsor, Nature's Help, who are playing their part in supporting women's health and women in the menopause life stage with their wonderful supplements. I'll share more on that a bit later. Before I welcome my guest today, I want to share an exciting opportunity with you, and I don't want you to miss out. I'll be taking a women's wellness retreat in Bali in June this year with one of my dearest friends and an icon of fitness and transformational coaching, Kylie Gates. Kylie and I have been talking about this forever, and we are finally doing it. There is an early bird sign-up discount of 10% off the 5 days, 4 nights retreat, but that ends on February the 29th. I'll put the link in the show notes for all the details to the retreat, and we would love to see you there. I mean, it's Bali. Welcoming to the Sexy Aging Podcast today. I have been extremely excited about interviewing this incredible person, but also talking about this specific topic. And it's one that's come up in Facebook groups quite a lot. So I'm one of those people that peruse the Facebook groups, and anything to do with fitness, health, wellness, exercise, of course, I'm going to drop in my feedback. But when this question comes up, why isn't my MHT, they usually say HRT, why isn't my HRT working, or why are all these things going wrong, and why am I that anomaly that obviously isn't having a great experience? What do I do? And I would love to welcome Dr. Sunita. She's the co-founder of Hera Menopause Health, the first GP-led menopause clinic in WA, right?
That's correct.
Yes, in Perth, one of my absolute favorite places. Hey, thank you for joining me on Sexy Aging.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure, Tracy, and a real honor. And great to talk about something that's quite close to my heart, because myself and my co-founder, Dr. Michelle, that's what we talk about all day long. how did we come to this place? I guess we've worked in general practice, what I call general practice, for many years, and we just sort of felt like, you know, women were coming through the door and they just weren't being heard. They didn't, you know, in and out 10 and 15 minutes, we just don't get a chance to actually tease out what's bothering you, what's happening, what's your whole picture of health, and what more, you know, if you're having problems with whatever therapy you're on. And so that's why we thought we need to create a general practice where we can actually sit down, do tailored care, have extra time, work out, you know, things from their menstrual history, obstetric history, the journey all the way to this point, because every woman has a story. And I think that's what I love about it, is that women, I guess they almost feel like it's indulgent sometimes to be able to sit down and talk about themselves. It's true, because they're so focused on their family or their work or their parents or their friends or everybody else, and they don't really have time to sit down and talk about their whole story. But when you put it down in front of you, it's amazing actually what comes out. So I love that. I love learning about, and this is what we're going to talk about, is that each woman has a completely different biology, physiology, genetics. It's amazing. And
yeah.
I think you probably feel like this, but I feel like we're working in this area, which is a really emerging space. It's like we know that female medicine's been ignored for so long, and I think it's only the 1990s they started including women properly in studies, and so there's so much stuff we don't know. But the more that we learn, the more that we realise we don't know, first of all, but there's so much exciting stuff out there.
Yeah, Dr. Sunita, we are trending and hot right now.
Yeah, we are.
And not for all the good reasons.
Yeah.
It's yeah. So well, thank you. It's so nice to hear. I actually can hear the passion in your voice for what you do. And I agree with you, how women will go to their doctor and usually the first experience, if they haven't been recommended to a doctor who is menopause savvy, the first experience can be really confronting. And yeah. oftentimes a woman feels like she's taking up the doctor's time with unnecessary chit chat. But right. and because she can't pinpoint all the things that actually sum up what menopause is. And I kind of liken it to buying a lottery ticket, right? And I actually just bought one the other day, and you're looking through, you've got to pick all the numbers, and there's 40 to choose from, right? And then you've got to pick the combination. I think menopause is like that.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
you don't know if you're going to win. Like there's that one, I don't know, 0.0005% the person that wins is the person that has no menopause symptoms.
Rare. Obviously, I don't really see them. And I feel like we had this conversation because I asked, you know, what was your mother's menopause like? What was maybe an older sister's, but certainly in our mothers and grandmothers' generations, I don't know, and I don't know if you come across this, but a lot of women feel like they never had symptoms, or maybe they've suppressed it, or maybe, you know, like societally we are conditioned to just be like,
suck it up. Yeah.
Don't talk about it. So they don't have a lot of information from before. I'm hoping that the generations to come, my daughters, their friends, that they're going to actually, and their partners and the males in society are actually going to have some greater knowledge and awareness of the symptoms. And it's just like,
well, yeah, like, well, definitely our husbands, you know, yes. with people like you and I and a ton of other, you know, people who are willingly talking about menopause out there, their husbands are definitely up to speed, their partners.
Yes, they are. They could probably write a few books on their partners and, and their experience.
Yeah, I actually did.
I did write a
book called My Menopause Memoir, and it was really, I mean, there's lots of things in there about menopause, but it was from a very personal perspective. And of course, you know, I'm saying how the mood and the rages and how my husband bore the brunt of it. And I think a lot of people can just relate to that, you know?
Yeah.
I want to ask you a question that I've actually asked a few other doctor guests before, but I do see things kind of moving and shifting in this space as the conversation comes to light. Yes. What are the most common symptoms for women that are coming to see you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, they've, as you said, they have seen many, many people, and they've talked to, you know, a bevy of doctors or naturopaths or specialists. But I would say that the most, you know, like we all talk about hot flushes and night sweats, but actually I reckon it's mood and anxiety and loss of confidence and self-esteem. And it can be a very subtle thing. So it's, you know, you may not, a lot of women come and go, oh, I don't really know if I'm perimenopausal, but I don't feel like doing anything anymore. I don't feel like socializing. I'm withdrawing at work. I don't know who I am anymore. I think that's what a lot of women say to me. I feel like this asexual being who doesn't really have a definition. I don't know what my place is in society. They also feel like an old lady. They go, I'm 45 going on 90, and that I feel
like horrified.
Horrified. Yeah. It's happened like that. Why has it happened? You know, I used to be attractive. Someone said, I used to be attractive, and people were, you know, always knocking on my door. She said I had a long line of suitors, and now I just feel irrelevant. So it's a very subtle thing, and women, again, feel like they can't actually, they feel guilty saying that. They feel like there's nothing really majorly wrong, but I don't feel like myself. So they are aware of all those really common symptoms. So hot flushes, night sweats, you know, aches and pains, libido reduction, skin issues. But it's so interesting that you've probably come across, and other doctors may have said to you, there's some really weird, bizarre symptoms that come out. You know, I had a lady the other day, the only symptom was like electric shock feelings, you know, just zaps down my body. And, you know, the moment we started MHT, they've lessened and they've gotten better. And it's really interesting to see, because I think physiologically I can't exactly explain the mechanism of that, but somehow it is related to hormones and fluctuations. So
I definitely had that one, and I was living in Kuala Lumpur at the time.
Oh, God.
And every time if you park your car outside, you know that you're going to open up It's going to be about 45 degrees in the middle of the day. Yeah. So if you have to go and open up your car door, I used to get my kids to open the door for me because I was so terrified of the electric shock.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't get it anymore. So yeah, I'm not sure. I think I must have been in the height of perimenopause, exactly when I didn't know it was menopause.
That's right. Right? Exactly what I think is where women don't realize.
Hey, I want to ask you a question that is pertinent for probably any new listeners that are here. If they were to go to a doctor like yourself, like what's the protocol for diagnosing menopause? I don't know if you see a lot of things on social media, but there's, you know, you should go for a test. You should have all your hormones tested. You should get a blood test. You should do this test by Johnson & Johnson. You should do a home test. You could do the Dutch test. I mean, it's a shit show and it's really confusing. Tell us.
Yeah. What we do, and I guess we base our knowledge on International Menopause Society, et cetera, and Australian Menopause Society, and we have a symptom score sheet, really. I mean, as we said, there's 40 plus, there's hundreds of symptoms, but the most common symptoms, we developed our own at HERA, which is kind of based on the Green Climacteric Scale, and it's out of 54. We get women to do it before they come in.
Yeah.
We get them to do a full questionnaire about their history, as I said, their lifestyle, their, family history, everything that pertains to them. It's really important to know, particularly for the new listeners, that perimenopause can't be diagnosed on a blood test because, as we said, you have these wild swings of hormones and that can happen moment to moment, day to day. You know, so many women get told, oh, I've done your blood tests and they're perfectly normal. So there's nothing wrong. It's not menopause. But it could be very well, it could be perimenopause. So I don't tend to do blood tests for diagnosis for that unless a young person, so under 40, we're looking at premature, primary ovarian failure, something's happened and they suddenly have terrible symptoms, then you could possibly diagnose it on a blood test. Menopause is different because that is that day you lose your last egg, all of your hormones go crash.
Good night, shop shut.
And, yeah, I mean, I guess for some women it's relief because it's not chaos, so it's a different kind of stress. But we can look sometimes at the blood tests for that. There is sort of a diagnosis of menopause, but it's got to be like that, like your period being gone for about 12 months at least. So I just think that in a clinician's eye it might be helpful, but for women it's going to cause more stress, I guess, because if you're told, you know, your numbers don't match up, then you're going to discount that these things are due to perimenopause or menopause. We sometimes also use it postmenopausally to kind of titrate hormones. So sometimes just to make sure that women are on the right dose, and we'll talk about dose later.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's useful. I don't know about the validity of salivary tests, Dutch testing. It depends on the lab. It depends where you're going. But really the most important thing is, I think, you know, symptoms. Symptoms.
Yeah.
The cluster of symptoms.
Yeah.
The change. And a really good doctor sitting down, listening to you, teasing out what's going on.
Yeah. I've heard one really fantastic doctor. She actually lives quite close by, Dr. Linda Deer. She says
amazing,
right? I'll tag her because
she's
incredible work here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's been on the podcast and says that she diagnoses by listening.
Yep, that's exactly right. I think that's our superpower. We always say that, Michelle and I, that we have that ability to really tease out little subtle things that women would say and put it together. And that's part of, I mean, I like it because it's like being a detective. You're piecing together all pieces. It's a pretty heavy consultation. I mean, we spend 45 minutes to an hour with a woman teasing out what's going on, putting it together. And then sometimes you don't really know, like if a woman just has electric shocks that are really difficult and you might institute treatment and that's your sort of trial to see if it actually does work and that's what's going on. So
yeah
it's a bit, it is a bit of a journey between clinician and patient.
I think back to my own experience with trying to access an official diagnosis that I could move to the next stage, which is to assess whether I wanted to try MHT or not. Mm. I actually get a bit emotional when I think about it, because it just felt like everything was so hard.
Yeah.
And as in, my day felt hard. You know, what was going up in my head, the constant doubt, the feeling like I'd no longer had a place in the world when it came to fitness or wellness. You know, I felt like nobody would have wanted to listen to me. What did I have to say? I've aged out. So when I sort of think about these things, it feels quite emotional. So I really do empathize with women who are hearing this and thinking, oh my gosh, that's me. Is that menopause? I'm like, you should check it out. Like, save yourself the heartache, save yourself the pain of, you know, just doubt, the doubt and the self-confidence thing that hits you. Actually, I remember wondering if everyone was going to survive in the house every day. I knew I would be fine, but how about you people? You know?
But it's like walking through mud. I mean, my personal experience was I went through premature menopause, probably around 38 or so. And sort of, my kids were really little. I was still coming out of the fog of that. And I went to see, I was a GP. So you think, God, wouldn't you know what's going on? But sometimes it's hard to be, to assess yourself.
Yeah.
But I did. I mean, I went to two endocrinologists who didn't really pick it. I went to, GPs. I tried to work it out myself. And it took a long time to get to that point. And the average time of diagnosis, I mean, hopefully it's getting shorter, but I think it can be as long as 7 years sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I would say mine was 4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
4 years before the light bulb went off and I realized that, this is perimenopause and actually I can do something about this.
Yeah, correct.
And then I got really angry, you know, as you do, because you're like, why did I have to do this for myself? Why is it not possible to just go, I'm feeling some kind of way, and someone goes, it's perimenopause and here's where you need to go, and this is... Anyway, here we are, Dr. Sunita.
It's happening, though. It's happening because my patients are talking to their other... Women are talking to women, and I love that.
Yeah. So good.
Powerful.
Yeah. So how do... I mean, after an assessment with a woman, what is your... I know that you don't get all... There's not an average woman when it comes to menopause, but what's your sort of standard protocol? Like, what's your... The things that you go to help women manage their menopause journey?
Yeah. So it's... We both practice with a very holistic, whole body approach because of the fact that our hormone decline affects every cell in every part of the body, then you've got to treat it in that way. And often because there's this delay in diagnosis and coming to the terms with this diagnosis, I guess women have let a lot of things slide. So we really believe in a preventative health approach as well. So, I mean, at midlife, we know that risks for cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis, diabetes, the list can go on, suddenly go up. So we, first of all, we make sure that their screening practices, so their cervical screening, their breast, their bowel, their skin, their bone density, the cardiovascular screening is up to date. We make sure there's nothing else underlying, like thyroid disease, autoimmune conditions, pre-diabetes, all these things are really common and do happen alongside menopause. That's the other thing. At the same time, there's other stuff going on. And so we do offer women MHT because in a lot of cases they cannot even think about changing their diet, their lifestyle, until they actually get some of these symptoms under control. So it's kind of... it depends on the woman, but it's a whole picture. It's not just MHT. It's lots of other things that go alongside it as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, look, I agree. I like to sort of drop in personal anecdotes based on what you've said, because I feel like it might resonate with someone when they go, oh, yeah, that was the moment. Mm. So I'm, a fitness person, and I love training and I love going out, working out. I know I'm one of those people that people like to hate, because I love the fitness thing. But I remember sitting on the couch, I think it was 2 or 3 days in 1 week, and I was ready to go to the gym. I was ready to do my workout, and I wasn't excited, and I didn't end up going.
Yeah.
And when that happened the third day, I thought, there is something really wrong with me here. This is well before my diagnosis. There is something really wrong. Like, what is wrong that I am physically able to go and work out, but up here in my head, I don't care anymore.
Which is really sad. And that's why I love hearing what makes women tick. So whether they're an artist, whether they're a fitness instructor, whether they're a scientist, there's something. And when they say to me, I don't want to do that anymore, I feel like a lady said to me the other day, I used to love dancing, but I feel overwhelmed when I go to the class. I just feel I want to run away. I did run away last week, and my heart bleeds for them, because you think, you're a shell of a human being. If you can't do what you love, well, then what's the point?
Yeah.
It's just devastating. So I think that's a real clue, actually, for women.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people have identified that as the lack of joy.
Correct.
Right. And for me, that was the bottom of the hill. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love your approach to how you're helping women understand what they're experiencing, and just that listening ear. You just, the validation and the understanding of, okay, we're all in this together, and there's a way forward. One of the ways forward that you've recommended, and I know you take a holistic approach, but is for a lot of women, the lifesaver of MHT, commonly known as HRT, but I actually like the MHT acronym.
Yeah, I'm training myself.
Hormone therapy. Yeah.
To say MHT, because hormone replacement therapy is a bit more, it's too broad now, I think. You know, we have a lot of people who are transitioning. It's also, I say to women, it's been rebranded, because HRT is associated with that horrible study, and MHT is more modern and sounds better.
Yeah, more menopause hormone therapy. So do you want to just give us an overview of what that encapsulates? And then we're going to dive a bit deeper into when it doesn't work. And that's a really big question out. Stay a minute with me while I share some information on my sponsor for this podcast. Nature's Help are an Australian-based women's health supplement company, and they have designed a range of natural solutions that are specific to women in menopause. It's one of their best sellers, and they have hundreds of positive reviews. If you're watching this, let me show you what I'm using. I'm currently using their other supplements, including organic turmeric with black pepper and ginger, and magnesium oil to support my muscle cramps and inflammation, as well as their organic super greens in my protein smoothie. And get this, it's apple flavor, so it's not at all like drinking grass. You're gonna love it. I have a special podcast listeners discount code of 20% off when you use the code SEXYPOD20, but you don't have to remember it, so just go to the link in the show notes to access that.
Correct. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk about it on social media at the moment. There's, I guess we're able to talk about it now because, as most women know, although some don't know and some clinicians don't know as well, that there was a big study in 2002 that said MHT causes breast cancer. It's been completely discounted. We now have hormones which are more like our body's hormones. So they used to be synthetic hormones, synthetic estrogen and progesterone, and now we have what's known as body identical. So they're still pharmaceutically made, but their structure is like the hormones that are found in our body. So body identical. So they're much more low risk. I think, Tracy, it's about as close to natural as we could get. So often,
well, I tell women the same, and they're like, "Oh, I'm on the contraceptive pill, but I don't think I'll ever take hormone replacement therapy." I'm like, "What?" I'm like, "Go and study that. Go and study that." You know,
exactly. And that's what we're starting to realize. We used to, as doctors, reflexly put women on contraceptive pill, and that's a whole nother podcast.
Well, we're not talking about that one today.
That's huge.
Yeah.
This is very different. So in Australia, MHT consists of estrogen as a patch or a gel. I think it's the same. Probably you can't get gel as much in New Zealand. I think there's a spray in the UK. There's also tablets. So estradiol. Safest through the skin because it doesn't increase the risk of clots or strokes. Progesterone is a tablet or a Mirena IUD. And testosterone is a gel or a cream. And it still is, I think, in head-to-head studies with natural entities like black cohosh and red clover and a lot of the things that we have to treat, particularly vasomotor symptoms, still the best thing that we have, really, most effective.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I'm a believer. I put my patch on twice a week, and I have the Mirena. So that is relatively easy for me to manage my menopause symptoms. But I just got to say, and I know a lot of women who have been on MHT for a while, they will know if they do one thing from the lifestyle list, if they do one thing kind of wrong, it can still impact your symptoms a little bit. So, for example, I have literally stopped drinking. You know, like over time, I tried for 2 years to just debunk the theory while I was on MHT. But yeah, I'm at that point where it still messes with my sleep. It still causes anxiety. And I'm like, okay, well, that's it. Everything else is pretty much under control. But if I don't get enough sleep properly or my stress levels go high because something's happening, you know, I'll still get a little bit of the menopause symptoms. So I think we still have to do the work. The patch is not going to take everything away, right?
Exactly. And that's what I say to women. Okay, now you're feeling better. You have to address all that other stuff now. It is a real turning point in life. You're now preventing your risks, and this is your chance to live your best life, you know, for the rest of time, which often is another 40 years, you know, 30, 40 years. I know it's sad. A lot of women say, oh, yeah, I can't drink anymore. I think my husband still goes, well, oh, don't you want a glass of wine? But it's not worth it. It's not worth it.
Well, it got down to, this is super sad and a bit of a confession, but it got down to low alcohol white with ice. I mean, it's almost not even worth it, is it?
No.
Yeah, we're from New Zealand and Australia. It's very available. It's almost
very available. Very.
The wine is the same price as a bottle of milk. So
I know. Well, it's okay. Yeah. It's not as bad as apple cider vinegar dashed in a soda water. That's.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I'm now on to the zero alcohol mocktails, which I must say are pretty tasty, and they don't give me anxiety.
Yeah.
So, all right, the big question that we've come to is, and this is one that I see in a lot of social media groups, Facebook groups, is that the conversation between women where they've possibly started MHT, they may have just started it 6 weeks in, or they've been on it for 6 months, and for whatever reason, they're having all kinds of issues and struggling. Can we go into what issues that we might see and sort of talk through that conversation of why MHT may or may not work for women?
Yeah. So, I mean, we know, first of all, and I like to remind patients that anything can cause side effects. So, you know, side effects, allergies, adverse outcomes, anything, even natural supplements, even things we know that are good for us, even exercise, Tracy.
Yeah.
You get hives or get angioedema from exercise. It's very rare, but it can happen.
And
very rare, but it's so frustrating for women when they've spent all this time seeing clinicians, searching for an answer, hoping for a cure, hoping that they'll just magically be like their friend. You know, as we said, women talk to their friends and they go, you know, so-and-so, Tracy started this and look at her, she's amazing, she's got so much energy, she looks so youthful, but, you know, it doesn't work. It doesn't work according to plan. You know, I think we live in a society where we expect instant relief. And as women, we're up against different genetic makeups, different metabolisms, different skin absorptions, you know, allergic and immunological profiles are completely different in people. And we don't have that genetic information yet to say this person's going to react to this medication, this person's going to react to this medication. It'll come, but really we have to, it's a bit of trial and error. So
yeah.
You know, as women, we are very complex organisms.
That's true.
And so, there's huge expectations from women that we have to deal with. And, you know, I've also got a lot of women who come in saying they don't really have a lot of symptoms, but maybe this is a magical anti-aging potion. Maybe it's going to give me superpowers. So it's hard to manage those expectations. Replenishing hormones for symptomatic women can often, you know, most of the time, as we talked about, can feel like they've got their life back.
Yeah. So it's 80% of women on MHT have positive results, right?
Yeah, really positive results.
Yeah, so good. Yeah.
You know, it'll be good to talk about this from here, but, you know, that's what my job a lot of the time is to tweak, fine tune, As I said, I love it because it's detective work, because it's really the art of medicine. It's listening and it's working out, well, what could be the thing that's irritating this lady? What's causing distress in her when it comes to starting MHT? So, yeah, we can go through some of the main things. I guess one of the main things that women come to us with is unwanted bleeding.
Right.
We often know that starting MHT, it's actually better to start it in perimenopause than in menopause for the long-term cardiovascular, bone, etc. benefits. So that means a woman is often bleeding, and it often means that their bleeding started to change. If they're used to having very nice clockwork periods, it's going to be different. And so you're dealing with that anyway. As we said, you're dealing with these hormones that are going a bit cray-cray underneath. But on average, these women are losing estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. So they are suffering from symptoms of the deficiencies of those, and so we need to replace them. Mm-hmm. Normally, if women have unwanted bleeding within the first 3 to 6 months of starting or changing an MHT, we consider it pretty normal, and particularly like even if it's postmenopausal. So often women wouldn't have bled for a long time and they start spotting after starting MHT, and we say it's okay, it's probably because of what you're taking. Obviously, if it keeps going, it must be investigated. So yes. Getting a proper ultrasound, sometimes there are polyps, there are fibroids. Sometimes it's very simple. It can just be due to a missed dose. You've been traveling or you've forgotten a progesterone, and some women just have these things which I've now termed irritable endometriums, irritable linings. They just are very sensitive to fluctuations in hormones. And I guess, you know, for some women it can be as irritating as a little bit of spotting that goes on for a while. For some women, it can be extremely intrusive and painful. I've got women who refer to their bleeding as the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, yeah.
Can be horrendous, particularly in perimenopause, regardless if they're on MHT or not. And we're trying all the time to balance that estrogen, which helps the symptoms of the hot flushes and the fatigue and the aches and pains and all the symptoms we talked about, with the progesterone, which is suppressing the lining, suppressing any pathology you have inside your uterus. So I guess what can we do? Usually you have to start on something. If you've started on a patch and maybe a progesterone pill, then you might need to switch it up. You might need to change it to a different progesterone pill, or like yourself, try the Mirena.
Mm.
Some women get so annoyed with the bleeding, they just want to give up altogether.
Yeah.
Some women, you know, we go through all the different options and it's not until they get a Mirena or they have something known as an endometrial ablation where they get, you know, the lining is burnt off. I've got some women who even will go as far as getting a hysterectomy until their bleeding obviously settles down. And it's really hard, I guess, in summary, to get that estrogen, progesterone balance right. It's important to get investigated, and sometimes you have to go and see a gynecologist. So it becomes a bit of a journey. I don't know if you had a similar journey, but it's not as simple as here you go, here's some MHT, off you go. It becomes a bit frustrating for a woman. So bleeding needs to be addressed, can be managed, but again, it depends on how your uterus, what else is going on, reacts to what you're on.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge, and it is like you say, it's like playing detective, because everyone's so different, and you can't really take the advice of your friends.
No.
I think that's an important thing. I mean, I think the best advice that a friend could give is just say, you need to talk to your doctor about this. And and obviously, if you've developed a great relationship with someone like yourself, you're going to get like the best care.
Yes. I mean, I feel sad that, again, women will put up with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre bleeding. And be terribly, supremely iron deficient, anemic, and they just won't do anything about it, Tracy. And it's because they think, oh, yeah, I'll just keep going.
Yeah.
It can have quite a detrimental effect on your health.
Yeah.
A lot of
But also it just stops you in life.
Stops
because
you in life.
Right? Yeah. You go, I can't go to the gym. I can't exercise, I can't swim, I can't catch up with my friends, I can't wear this, I can't wear that. It just, yeah, right. Or I'll be at work and I have to get up from my desk every 45 minutes.
Right. That's right. Or teachers saying to me, I can't go to the toilet because it's just, I'm flooding, but it's, you know, I'm stuck in a class. It's awful.
Yeah.
You know, women, a lot of women have endometriosis and that can flare because estrogen can flare that, and that needs to be looked at as well. So that's why I think, finding a GP who will look at, or a specialist who will look at your past history, it does come into play in perimenopause and menopause because things can get worse before they get better.
Yeah. Other than studies and statistics that may or may not be out there, from your viewpoint, seeing the woman that you see every day, what is the percentage of women that are unsuccessfully or having a bad time on MHT?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I'd say in our practice, I think probably 15 to 20% is probably, you said that before, like 80%.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, I think most women, there'll be some tweaking that needs to happen. I think that's what women need to realize. There's not that many women that I go, here you go, this is what we're putting you on, this is the dose, and they walk back in and they go, I feel amazing, everything's perfect. And that's why I get them to do that symptom scorer again to compare. And sometimes I don't even realize some of these symptoms are still not being dealt with. And so often, you know, most women, they feel much better, but they're not quite there yet. And I often say to them, well, much better is good, but you want to be back to yourself. I'm not trying to make you some kind of superhero, even though we all want to be.
But I was like, hang on, I don't know if I like that.
No, I do. In some ways you are.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You need to be as good as you can be. So don't just settle for I'm okay.
Yeah, so, I agree.
That's the other thing. A lot of women will say, I've started MHT from my GP. I still don't feel right. I feel like I'm halfway there. So, you know, keep pushing. I'd advocate for pushing to get it as right as you can. Now, sometimes we cannot get 100%. We cannot get perfection. So,
I'd say,
like maybe 15% need a bit more work, and there'll be an even smaller percentage, maybe 2 to 5% who really, you know, it might be a year or two before they get to where they need to. I have an even smaller percentage of women who probably under 2% who really go, I cannot take it. I can't take it.
That's something. So is there quite a high level of progesterone intolerance? Is that what you're typically seeing?
Yeah. So that's the other thing I wanted to talk about.
I'm jumping the gun.
I don't think it's talked about a lot. I think that we haven't really recognised it, and it's really probably more prevalent than we realise. You know, we pick it when those women come back and they go, oh God, I feel awful on the MHT. I don't know what you've given me. I've been bloated. I've got weight gain. Now, I put on 6 kilos in 3 months. You sort of think, that's a bit weird. I'm irritable. I'm more irritable. I've got acne. I feel tired. I feel drowsy. My breasts are really tender. That makes me think, oh, something's not right. It's often the progesterone is the factor. It can be really subtle, or it can be really florid, and women can feel awful on it. I get a bit of a hint from their history when they say, oh, I used to be on the pill, but it's made me, you know, it used to make me totally crazy. And so that's where we were talking about the difference between synthetic progestogens and body identical progesterone. So on balance, women are going to be more sensitive to those synthetic progestogens that you find in the pill, and can be sometimes used as part of MHT. But the newish, you guys call it Utrogestin,
yeah, it's free.
Free for you, it's not free for us. Come on.
Come on, Australia.
Come on.
And other places, of course. Yeah.
Yes, it's rather expensive, and that is like it's micronized progesterone. It's biologically like your own progesterone. Most women actually find it beautiful. They love it. It's calmative, it's sedative, makes them feel pretty chill. But there's a very small percentage of women who also are extremely sensitive to this. And interestingly, some of these women are actually sensitive to their own progesterone. So these are the women that, again, looking back at their menstrual history, they say from ovulation till their period, they get terrible mood drops. They get the same. They get acne. They get bloating. They get greasy skin. They go. They're grumpy. They're nasty. So it's they're very sensitive to progesterone. So
is it similar to PMDD?
Yes, PMS, PMDD. Often that can be the driver.
Right. Okay. So if they've had a history of that and they're aware of it, then that might be a red flag.
Sometimes.
Okay, sometimes. Awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm actually just sitting here in this moment kind of putting the pieces together just with this conversation. It's really, really interesting.
It's so interesting that we've not talked about these things. And that's, I think, why a lot of the work from Jayashri Kulkarni over in Monash in Melbourne and all the mind stuff is so enlightening, that really a lot of female mental health is related to hormones.
Yeah.
Whether it's exogenous that we've given to them, you know, chuck people on the pill as we used to, or their own hormones. So, or lack of hormones. So, yes, PMS and PMDD, although some women benefit from the progesterone as well. That's the thing. So,
yeah. So it's all tweaking and we're all beautiful and different.
Beautiful and different. Let's celebrate that. But, so how do we get around it, Tracy? I guess.
Yes, please.
As clinicians, we do try and aim to use that micronized progesterone for most women. If we can, if I've heard that in a woman, I sort of think, oh, okay, let's try this first. If they're still getting symptoms with the micronized eutrogestan or Prometrium, then what we do is we actually use it vaginally.
Oh, so okay. Okay, that's cool. I actually wasn't aware of that. So, yay.
Now, this is an off-label thing. It's been studied, I think, in Italy, in Europe. They're always far ahead of us there. We know we use it in much higher doses in fertility, so that we know that the vagina does have a great vasculature that can absorb. And I guess the reason for using it is to protect the lining of the uterus. So you won't get those supposed sort of calmative sedative effects, but most women who are sensitive to progesterone don't get them anyway. So the woman would use actually the same tablet vaginally.
Fantastic.
And that can help. In most women, that can be just like, oh, okay, once you get your head around doing that, it doesn't get absorbed through your gut. It doesn't rely on your gut metabolism, so you don't tend to get those other effects of progesterone throughout your body.
So similar to vaginal estrogen, if you were just wanting to focus on menopause symptoms related just to the vagina and the vulva, and then you would get topical estrogen because you're like, maybe you don't have other symptoms, so it would be similar to that, right?
Kind of. I guess this is just more as a protective measure for your uterus, really.
Yeah,
that's why you
amazing use it. I learned something new. That's so cool.
Sometimes that doesn't work either. So
okay, then what happens?
Sedated on it, like I'm sleepy from it. So they obviously just the tiniest amount will send them, you know, off. And so then you've got to look at using a different kind of progesterone. There is something called dihydrogestrone, which is another gentle progesterone, quite hard to get, or the Marina. I mean, the Marina is a synthetic progesterone, but it acts very locally. So most women don't get a lot of hormone throughout the rest of their body. So that can work quite well. Some women I have had, and I can count them on my hand because it's so few, they would need to actually have a hysterectomy altogether, which is really radical. I mean, that's radical, but that is the end of the line. Once you have a hysterectomy, usually you don't have to use progesterone. So,
We've done quite a few podcast episodes on men on hysterectomy, surgical hysterectomy, the effect of hysterectomy, which is really good. It's very enlightening, and I learned a lot from the guests there as well. But like you say, it's radical. But what I'm actually hearing a lot of women be told by their doctors or gynecologists that hysterectomy is almost like first line treatment for your issues. I'm just like, no. I think you need to get a second opinion.
It depends on the woman. It depends on the woman. Some, for some women, it is completely life-changing. And they say,
myself included.
It's like, I don't miss my uterus. It's done its job. That's great. But for some women, it is wrapped up with emotion and fertility and so many other things. It's still an operation. And it may not, even though it's keyhole, in a lot of cases, it's not always that easy. So I guess the answer from these two major issues with if your MHT is not working is if you can find a good clinician, you have to step through these options, and that may end up with hysterectomy. It may end up, you know, with something radical, but keep persisting, because often women who come out the other end, they're so much better and they don't look back and say, oh, I wish I didn't do that. It's just persistence. It's really hard. It's really, really hard for those poor women. It's not simple. And I think it's a good message that women need to hear that you're not alone. If you do have problems with your MHT, you're not alone. It can happen. And
yeah,
extra help.
Hey, I'm really looking forward to being 70 and doing a catch-up call and saying, remember the time when it was you had to jump so many hoops and you had to have X amount of appointments to fine-tune your MHT, and now you can just do one lick test and get the right dosage? Wouldn't that be amazing? Because that's kind of the direction that we want to go in, but it feels like, why is this only just happening now, you know?
I don't know. Yeah, I hope that we develop something that's like a little, like, yeah, like a sticker or a little pump that has it all, you know,
yeah,
it's all finely tuned.
It's got to match your wardrobe, though.
What's your wardrobe?
Yeah, because, you know, if a guy is developing these things, they're not necessarily like looking that sharp, you know. A lot of women actually do ask to see my patch, and they're quite surprised to see how little it is and that it's hiding underneath the front of my underwear. They're like, oh gosh, I thought it was like way bigger. I'm like, yeah, there are some that are big and nasty and they do slip off, but they're actually quite surprised. I think that, you know, yeah, looking forward to the day where these things are just, you know, easy to access if you want to. And I think I always come across with the closing line to any interview that, you know, this is a buffet, this is your choice. And, you know, we need to learn as much as we can about how to look after our own bodies. So I just want to thank you, Dr. Sunita. I have learned so much from you. This is a really big question that you've answered. And I know that there's a lot of women, a lot of people out there that are going to be like, okay, I'm going to go back to my doctor. I need to revisit this. I'm going to push forward. I want to feel the best that I possibly can. And I think that you've given a lot of women hope.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I think, I think the keynotes, the sort of important things I want everyone to just take away is just keep trying. I think, you know, find the right dose, find the right delivery. Sometimes it won't work. Sometimes there'll be little issues. Sometimes you have to accept that it may not be for you. There are so many other non-hormonal options you can look at. There's lots of new, novel, exciting ones. There is so much that you talk about, Tracy, that, you know, we talk about with our patients that you can do that will make your life so much better, you know, to keep moving, to use your diet as medicine, look at your sleep, think about some good supplements. There's so much that you can do. MHT is not everything. It may help with a lot of it, but you need a good champion in your corner to help you, you know, move through beautifully and live your best life. So, keep advocating for yourself. Keep getting support.
Yeah, and we're here for it.
Definitely. You're doing an amazing job, Tracy.
Thank you. And you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Sexy Aging. And a huge thank you once again to my guests who offer their time and their knowledge. Hey, if you love this episode, go and check out some of the other ones and subscribe to the podcast so I can continue to bring you content you will love. I'd also appreciate a review if you've got a minute. And if you're watching or listening to this episode on Spotify, there is the opportunity to give specific feedback and comments on this episode. Get out there and slay and stay sexy.